I think we got the majority, Gail. So
Okay.
I'll go ahead and start. Good afternoon. It's 12 p.m. here at the NP BOMEX Medical Board meeting. And we have with us Mr. Hutchinson from the AG's office. Is Ms. Campbell with us today?
No,
No.
just me.
Okay. And I'm Dr. Bruce Sadlick. And I'll have Ms. Anthony, our executive director, go ahead and do roll call for us.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Popiel?
Here.
Ms. Gallen?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Here.
Dr. Rubin?
Present.
We have quorum.
Okay, so let's go ahead and roll through. Declaration of conflicts of interest. Just a reminder on number two, Dr. Rubin is recused from 6B, 6C, and 7. Dr. Popiel is recused from 5A and B, and Dr. Spad is recused from item number 6A. We do have a civility policy in accordance with the open law. The board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out our business. Those violating this policy will be asked to modify once, and then after that, we'll disconnect you. I'd like to move on to 4A, and then if we can, run that all the way through up until 5. So that'd be 4A, running that all the way up to 4S and Sam.
I'll second that motion. This is Dr. Popiel.
Thank you. Do we need roll call for that, Gail?
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. That brings it.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. And that brings us to number 5, review, consideration, and possible action regarding the following board cases. We'll go ahead and start with, we have 5A, and that's board case number 24-237, and that's Dr. Ortiz. And we'll take it in order, so I'll have Ms. Anthony give us a quick overview.
Okay. This is board case 24237 regarding Dr. Ortiz. The board reviewed a complaint from patient DO alleging doctor failure to comply to standard regulation. At the meeting of November 9th, the board considered the matter and requested continuation in order to obtain expert opinions. The board has now been supplied with the information provided from those experts.
Okay. Do we have Dr. Ortiz on the phone?
Yes.
Okay. And
also Steve Maffey representing Dr. Ortiz.
Okay. And board members, questions before we begin? So I'll make a motion to go to an executive session for legal advice on case number 24-237. Now I'll need a second.
Just for Spat, I second that.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. We'll see you in executive session. All righty, we're back into public. It's 12:29, so I'll have Ms. Anthony do roll call.
And Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Pope, I'm sorry, Dr. Popio is recused. Ms. Gallen? Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt? Dr. Spatt, I think your mic is off. Dr. Rubin? Dr. Rubin?
Present.
Thank you. Dr. Spatt, are you with us? Dr. Sadlick, I can see Dr. Spatt on the line. I think his mic is off.
Okay. Yeah. His mic may be off. Dr. Spatt, are you with us? Let me see if I can get him real quick, Dale.
Okay.
Gail, can you hear us?
Yes. Yeah. We do have quorum.
Okay. So we're 12:30, and we got Dr. Spatz, so we have quorum. So, board member questions, ideas, and then we'll hear from Dr. Ortiz, or we'll hear from Mr. Mahaffrey, and then move on. So, Mr. Mahaffrey referenced, or Dr. Ortiz referenced the case number 24-237. Any comments, suggestions?
In reference to anything in particular?
In reference to the complainant, in terms of the procedure, et cetera.
Do you mean in addition to what we've talked about last time, or?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have no comment in addition to what was discussed in the previous meeting.
Okay. And then case number 24-242. Actually, that's a rolled in case. Let's go ahead and deal with 24-237. So I'm going to ask the board members their opinions, thoughts, and suggestions.
This is Dr. Rubin. One of, you know, the main issues for me that are continuing to be present is the expert opinion testimony that we received from inside the profession from, I believe, Dr. Rodriguez, who has opined that the procedures therein are not considered minor surgery. I'm not a surgeon. I don't perform minor surgery. In my opinion, however, I would agree with Dr. Rodriguez for two reasons. One, that's her expertise. And number two, just the way that the procedures are done, and from what I learned in school and from what I know of what's being taught in school, they are not minor surgical procedures, in my opinion. In my opinion, only that I share with her. I also wrestle with the general anesthesia perspective. Naturopathic doctors are not licensed to administer general anesthesia. We have expert testimony from a board-certified anesthesiologist that the anesthesia which was administered to all the patients herein was done procedurally fine and there was no issue. And so I don't have an issue with the anesthesia itself. I have an issue with the concept of doing a procedure that actually requires something that we're not allowed to administer, general anesthesia. And if a procedure requires general anesthesia, how is that a minor procedure? I don't know. I mean, the minor procedures we were taught require local anesthesia, which we're licensed to administer. And because of that, I don't, in my opinion, this does not fit our scope because of those reasons. And I am open to more testimony, but that's where I sit. And I think that, you know, I liken it to what I do during my day. I mean, there are certain things that I would like to do, but they are not covered by our scope. And so I don't do them. And that's where I sit. And thank you.
May I comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Mahaffrey.
That's Dr. Ortiz.
It's Dr. Ortiz here. First, I'd like to say to Dr. Rubin, thank you for your commentary. I would like to first state that I do not administer general anesthesia. And general anesthesia was not used. So I want to reiterate that what was used was a local monitored form of anesthesia by a board certified anesthesiologist. That's no different than having a private contractor come into your office to perform something that they're duly licensed and qualified to do. So I don't perform that. More importantly, though, the procedure does not require that any form of anesthesia other than local. That's an option to the patients. The patients are aware of that. Tumescent anesthesia is how the procedures are performed. I merely offer the option to the patient if they would like to have a more sedation type of procedure, then they can have that. And again, that's performed by a practitioner that is board certified and licensed, and it is in their expertise. Regarding the expertise of the expert witness, and with all due respect to that witness, that's a practitioner that has not been practicing for very long as a whole. I'm not even sure what the level or extent of her level of training or extended training from other than what she learned in school is in terms of opining on any procedures outside of that. I have some unique and particular postgraduate training that is afforded to me to mid-level practitioners. I'm not the only mid-level practitioners. There are nurse practitioners and PAs that are also performing these procedures. So when you're making the decisions, please keep that in mind. I am not administering. I'm not doing anything outside of the scope of practice. I'm not doing anything that is not within that's not specified. There's nothing that says I cannot do what I'm doing in the bylaws or the laws or the regulations. And I realize that it's something that may require additional training, but I have provided to the board significant amounts of hours of additional training. And to that end, most of us have and or are practicing or performing procedures that we were not trained in our schooling to do. And so I just wanted to make that comment.
And one last comment. We've not been provided a copy of the expert opinion report that you've seen, just for clarity.
Got it. This is Dr. Rubin. Thank you, Dr. Ortiz. I knew that you had not administered general anesthesia, and I knew that if general anesthesia was provided, it was provided by somebody other than yourself. But you're saying that the procedure that in all three of these cases, but specifically this case, could be performed with only a local injected anesthesia.
Correct. Tumescent anesthesia, which is a dilute form of lidocaine. And in fact, I do perform those procedures about 50% of the time in that fashion.
Got it. Well, Mr. Mahaffey does not have that testimony. I withdraw the opinion about general anesthesia for this case. If there were a case that would require general anesthesia for the thing to be performed, I would not consider that minor. I, at this point, haven't seen evidence of how this is considered minor compared to what we've been taught in school. And also, you made a comment that mid-level practitioners are doing this. I don't know what their rules state. I don't know what their law state or how their boards see this, you know, what their training is. If you're talking about a nurse practitioner or a PA, like I simply just don't know. And I know that you had brought, we talked about transferring tissue. You had talked about stem cell transfer in the past, which I thought was interesting. You talked about needle depth. It's the amount of time, the amount of tissue, the amount of work, and the testimony to me just, it doesn't come across as minor. I'm not convinced that it's a minor procedure. It seems maybe it's a mid-level, and because it's certainly not, you know, a hepatectomy, which would be considered a major procedure. And that's where I'm wrestling with things. And that's back to satellite. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rubin.
Yeah, this is the first part. I concur with what Dr. Rubin have stated as well. In our previous meeting, the patient say that they was under anesthesiologist, under sedation, I guess 6 or 8 hours, depend on which patient it is. And that's number one. I know that Dr. Ortiz, you didn't give any of those medications for sedation. I got that point. But for me, for patient, I don't do any upper surgery like you do. I definitely don't know anything about what you do per se, but I did my own research on it in regarding to the liposuction that you mentioned. So it depends on how much fat that you actually extract from the patient and the procedure itself. In any case, for me personally, I feel that is the major surgery for me, especially if the patient have to be under sedation for that long period. For me, I don't, I definitely don't, again, I don't do any of the procedure that you do, because I'm on the naturopathic board to protect the public, and I feel that, you know, I know that you have mentioned that you have extensive study from abroad and also here, and also you keep up with new technology and so forth. I understand that. But at this moment, what we're looking at this three case is that there is definitely, you know, for me, I feel like this is a major surgery for me. And from the opinion from Dr. Rodriguez, I do respect her as well. And so by that, I just want to, I feel that maybe we need to move into for me, I can't make any of this decision. And so I feel that there should be another expert opinion or something out that some other hearing that maybe they could be able to shed light on what you do and they can voice their opinion for us to see what other option that we can move forward with. And that's all I need to say.
Dr. Sadlett.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make a comment because I just heard twice, what sounded like personal opinions on the procedures that I'm performing, and it was my understanding that the board would be utilizing the same standard that I would be utilizing, which would be the actual regulation and rules put forth. And in reading the rules, the definition is not defined by the amount of time, nor is it defined by whether or not there is anesthesia or not, or the length of an incision, or any of those things. And while I understand personally it might be something that the individual board members, because of their lack of experience in this area, it might be out of ordinary for them. But regarding the specific statute on minor surgery, there is nothing that states that minor surgery is dependent on time and or level of anesthetic. And so I just wanted to make sure that everybody is clear about that.
Dr. Campbell.
My questions have pretty much been answered. I know that in the past, as a board, we have juggled with the term minor surgery in a variety of different ways, different procedures, and each one has come with their own unusual set of circumstances that we must address. And I know that the board and some of the larger associations were working on this definition of quote unquote minor surgery. And I think that that it's an issue that's going to continue to produce some of the concerns that the board has had until it's laid out more clearly for everybody to. And with that being said, I know that the position that the board is in right now, and public perception and different things that come into factor with this. I would like to make a motion that we join together both of the cases that are before us reference Dr. Ortiz, so that I would like to for cases, I believe it's 24237 and 24242, that those cases come together. And if anybody wants to second that, I'm open to that.
Yeah, just up the slide, I'm seconding that motion.
Gail, can you do roll on that?
Yeah, so the motion is to consolidate case number 24237 and 24242, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And roll call, please. Dr. Dadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Gowan? Ms. Gowan? Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Ms. Gowan? I believe she's with us. Ms. Gallant, can you hear us? Well, we do have quorum to move forward with that.
Okay. So moving forward with that, this, if you are available, then let us know.
This is Diva Gallant. I'm sorry, my phone cut out.
Okay. Are you, can you please vote on the motion?
Yes, I had said aye, and then for some reason it cut out.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries.
So, Dr. Campbell, with your motion on rolling 24237 and 24242 together, do you have thoughts of where you want these cases to go?
With regard to, I guess all sides of this, taking a 360 view, including Dr. Ortiz, and his profession and where he comes from in, with regard to as the physician in this, I would like, to make a motion, that, we forward, these cases, for, review to OWA, so that, you know, a more thorough and broader view from all perspectives can be gained. And so again, my motion is to send this to formal hearing.
And sorry, this is Casey Hutchison. Is that because, that you found the information provided in the investigation warranted suspension or revocation?
Utilizing the perspective from the board at this time, yes.
Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion, and that was clarified. Ms. Anthony, do you want to do a roll call?
Do we need a second on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we need a second.
Okay, that's the plus one. I second that.
Okay, so we got a second. And then we're going to have to need a roll call on that.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Gollin?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, let's move on to, we got 5A, 5B. We can move on to 5C as in cat. And that's, is Dr. Ellie Wright, case number 24243. Is Dr. Wright on the phone? Dr. Wright?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Okay. So you're on the phone. And is the complainant on the phone? Going once, twice, no complaint. Okay. Ms. Anthony, could you give us an overview?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is case number 24243, Dr. Ellie Wright. The board received a complaint from patient RH who alleges her HAS card was denied for payment of services and she paid out of pocket. Further, she alleges when she asked for a breakdown of fees and a letter of medical necessity, Dr. Wright failed to provide her with these documents.
Dr. Wright, your thoughts? Dr. Wright, are you there? I think we might have lost her. So,
hello.
Okay. It's Dr. Sadlick. I was asking you for your thoughts on this HSA card issue. I don't think we have her. So it appears that from reading the complaint that there was an issue with an HSA.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I was worried you were unable to hear me. I'm sorry.
Okay. So wherever you're standing, stay there because what we're looking for is can you give us your thoughts as to this complaint? I read your response, but can you give us further information?
So, as I said, I only know this patient for first time. She came in, she wanted to use her, health, saving, card, but she did not have it with her. So she manually tried to input the number, tried several times. It didn't go through.
And then she asked me if I have a promotion, and I gave her a $50 off. And she used some other card to make the payment. A card that I don't know what type of card, because it's not showing on my end the name of the person. And that evening, she emailed me with a picture of the internet. It was very hard to read, but I read something about Hitler, and she wanted a letter of necessity, and I thought maybe she has some difficult situation, financial problems, and something is going on with her. I was very worried about her. See, that's why I replied right away. And the way I replied, because I was very worried about her. And I understood that her she needed something, but I didn't know exactly what. And the letter of necessity, I have never wrote that for anybody before. I had people utilizing their health saving account, and they didn't need this such letter. So I was very confused. And I maybe replied too fast.
Do you feel your documentation is in terms of the work that you did, in terms of the encounter, do you feel your documentation is sufficient to perhaps prevent this from happening again?
Yeah, I did my best. And actually, if she has responded back to me, we would have clarified it. She brought it up during the visit or prior to the visit, explaining a little bit more of her situation face-to-face would have been better. That sending afterwards this email, it was very confusing. Something about healers and natural healers, off the internet. I wasn't aware of anything like that. I thought I don't describe myself yet as a healer. I don't have those kind of gifts. I did the best I could. I understand her frustration, and I have chosen to refund her the fee and the entire expense.
Okay. board members, let's start with Dr. Rubin. Questions or comments?
Oh, thanks, Dr. Cadillac. I would just like to remark how I think professional Dr. Wright has been, how she conducted herself. I have no problems with anything. Before I get too aggravated at perhaps a giant waste of this doctor's time and expenses and this board's time, I would be in favor of dismissal and would be happy to make a motion to that effect if the board would like, if nobody else wants to go.
This is Dr. Popiel. I have some questions first.
Go ahead, Dr. Popiel.
Dr. Wright, do you know what a letter of medical necessity is at this point after this case has been brought against you?
I haven't researched deep enough to claim such things, but I looked up in some of the health saving accounts related posted on internet by different banks and organizations. And I did not see any anything mentioned that way. I did not worry that much because I did not feel that this person needed this type of letter. I thought it was a misunderstanding from her part, and then a misunderstanding from my part. And
okay, all it is a simple explanation. You saw her for services. Obviously, you're not a insurance provider, but essentially you have a CPT code generally that would go with your office visit, such as like a 99202, 203, and that medical office visit needs an explanation, which is usually an ICD-10 code. So A letter of medical necessity is a simple statement saying, I saw the patient on this day, I've diagnosed them with these conditions, and I'm giving them supplements, et cetera, to treat them for that condition. It's a very simple statement. You mentioned that you now are no longer going to accept HSAs moving forward. To me, that's a disservice to you and your patients. Is a letter of medical necessity is a very simple standard form that you don't even have to have a template. Just write down, you know, I saw the patient on this day and this is what I diagnosed them with. Essentially, it's an explanation for why you build their credit card. So you build their credit card. All their HSA wants to know is, why did you build the card and do you have any medical justification for that? So that's my first statement. My second statement is, when you do your SOAP notes under the assessment section, you have no ICD-10 codes, you have no diagnoses. So that's a problem if you want to do a letter of medical necessity or just do a standard chart note, is you need an assessment and a diagnosis. Most of what you have in the assessment section is essentially plan. So I don't think your response to the patient is, I mean, it clearly shows your lack of knowledge about what this patient was basically asking for. All she asked for was a letter of medical necessity, which before you responded with medical hardship and all these things that you stated back to her, you might just Google it so you understand better what she's asking for, because it's a very simple standard form that you could have provided her. Then you get paid, she gets reimbursed, and everybody's happy. So also, I'm curious about the day of your appointment. There seems to be heavy metal test results. There seems to be mineral testing results. Where did all these test results come from?
I do in the office assessment of the nutrients and vitamins and minerals. It's a Libo scan, and if the patients come in and they opt for this sort of testing, it's an option. Also, I have it's a good way to start assessment before I even try to recommend any mineral and supplements, because I try to be personalized. And especially if the patient comes in and has no recent labs with them, I like to have some based on something, an assessment. So
that testing is an energetic scan of some sort?
It's a Libo scan. It's a French test that started about 10 years ago. I first was introduced when I went to the first naturopathic conference in Paris. And I know some other doctors use it in our office. It's a good start. I go from there. If there's something else going on, we can do a urine. I do blood, and we can assess further out. It uses light to.
So you have what your machine is diagnosing as nutrient deficiencies, heavy metal issues, et cetera, and whatever the patient's complaints are. So one would think you could make an actual diagnosis and put it in your assessment section of your chart notes, correct?
I go for mineral and vitamin deficiency with heavy metal. We can follow up with urine and blood if we wanted to go further out. It is a very good tool to educate the patient, because I stop and I explain sometimes the balance between magnesium, calcium, zinc, and copper. I educate where the sources of vitamin A naturally come from nature, how they can improve diet. So it's a very, for me, it's more educational, too open-minded. I can trace sometimes some deficiency, and we can do a short-term supplementation. If it's needed, we can further out do some blood testing in those nutrients. If the patient can afford, of course.
Dr. Wright, what goes in the A section of a SOAP note?
Can I jump in here? Sorry. I just remind the board that this is not it's not an interview at this stage. It's just an initial review, so the board can ask for additional investigation or proceed with non-discipline or move forward with a formal interview.
Understood. I'm just trying to get an understanding if Dr. Wright knows a SOAP note and can do a SOAP note. This is all basic stuff that should be able to be done. So that's, I'm just trying to get an understanding if Dr. Wright's understanding of SOAP notes.
I appreciate your feedback and I appreciate your explanation for the letter. I have not worked with insurance and I don't work with insurance. A lot of my approach are nutritional approach, are optional, are optimization of the diet, nutrients, vitamins, hormones, and so I don't intend to work with insurance.
Dr. Wright, regardless of whether you work with insurance, the board needs to understand if you can do a SOAP note. So regardless of whether you're billing insurance or not, your SOAP notes should reflect an actual diagnosis. So again, I guess I'll ask you, do you know what goes in the assessment section?
Yes, diagnostic.
Diagnostic or diagnoses? And what would that diagnostic look like for you?
I'm sorry, my accent is a bit messed up. I do an assessment in terms of evaluation. I give a bit of background. I give my thoughts sometimes of possible different options that could be in the follow-up. I include sometimes some recommendations and screening, intervention, assessment. It depends on the case. In this case, I didn't have any previous tests, and I only did this nutritional assessment, and I did not want to jump on into conclusions.
Okay. I don't have any further questions. My suggestion would be non-disciplinary CME for SOAP notes. That would be my thought at this point.
Yeah, Dr. Wright, I have to agree with Dr. Popiel because here's the thing. That letter would simply, if you said I gave her vitamin C, vitamin B for this specific diagnosis of whatever the person had, you could have saved this whole thing from transpiring. That SOAP note is critical because that is your document. And if you were just to give her the letter, even if she wanted the letter for supplementation, you would have had that. You could have simply rifled off patient needs for this and that diagnosis, and this wouldn't have happened. So I may have to agree with what Dr. Popiel is saying. The SOAP note is really kind of the critical angle. And I know that AZMA has, and there's other ones online too, has an 8-hour SOAP note review that probably would prevent this from happening again. So
I understand. I just did not understand this requirement of necessity of the letter of that time. I have supplied my other patient who was submitted last year for her reimbursement with just receipt, just the receipt, and that was fine. I did not know what she's qualified or she's not qualified for, or she's trying to qualify for, or maybe she has other hardship situation, why she would request at that time this letter. Absolutely, I did not feel it was
okay. I think we might have lost her, but Dr. Papillo, you made a motion. I'll second your motion with the 8 hours of continuing medical education on SOAP note.
And Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is Gail. So is that a motion for an order, non-disciplinary order for CME in charting 8 hours? How long does the respondent have to complete that?
Dr. Pia, I don't want to take your motion, so I'll let you.
Oh, that's fine. 6 months.
And is that
would be in addition to the standard CMEs.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
In addition to the standard CMEs.
Okay, thank you.
So we have a
non-disciplinary. Dr. Popio made the motion. Dr. Sadlick seconded that motion. Dr. Sadlick, did you want any more discussion?
No, I think the point it was well made, and if we could, I think the 8 hours of charting will help clarify any further issues. And I think now that the letter is pretty much understood, so I'm good with Dr. Popiel's motion.
Did you want me to do roll call?
Could we?
Yes.
Go ahead, Gail.
Okay. And all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. Let's move on to 5D as in dog. Dr. Jessica Anderson. This is case number 24-244, initial interview. And is Dr. Anderson on the line?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Okay.
And I'm also on the line. I am the, I guess you call me the plaintiff.
Okay. So we have Dr. Anderson, we have the plaintiff, and Ms. Anthony will give us an overview.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is case number 24244, Dr. Jessica Anderson. The board received a complaint from patient SM indicating she is unhappy with the results of cosmetic procedures performed by Dr. Anderson, and that Dr. Anderson failed to inform her of the amount of Juvederm necessary to provide results. Although SM signed a consent form stating no guarantee or assurances can be given, she argues Dr. Anderson should guarantee her results.
Okay. Dr. Anderson, let me go with you first, and then we'll roll to the complainant.
So the patient had come in for a consultation. She had a reunion that she was looking forward to and wanted to look younger and fresher. I had made suggestions as far as filler, but she also asked about Botox or Dysport, and I did guide her to not do that since she had never done it before. Most of the time it works well. Sometimes it doesn't, and I said let's not, since she wanted to look good, I said, let's not do that because most of the time it works well, sometimes it doesn't. And so as far as filler, I had recommended 3, possibly 4 syringes of filler, and then she agreed to 2. I told her that it would probably help give her more volume. I had never stated in her complaint that she had stated that I had said that it would get rid of her sagginess. And unfortunately, I've never promise anyone that because we can't. Only surgery can do that, and there's no way I can ever do that. I said that it can make her look fresher and younger, which is what she was asking me to do. And I gave her 2 syringes of Juvederm Voluma in her cheeks, which in the pictures I see a difference. I think it is very tricky for someone to look at their own pictures because we are our worst critic and we are looking at things sometimes and that's all we see. And if they're not gone completely, we don't see any improvement. So as far as I'm concerned, I saw a result in her picture. Unfortunately, she did not. And there is a finite amount of filler in each syringe. So unfortunately, there's nothing I can do to give more of a result. Would I have liked to have seen more? Absolutely. But it's just her skin and her body, and that's all I could do.
Okay. And you've been doing this for how long then?
Since 2007.
2007, okay.
So 15, almost 16 years, or actually 16 years.
Okay. And the complaint, SM, are you online still?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So what was it that you specifically, you made the complaint, what was your specific one item? Because we got 5 minutes. What was your one item that you felt was lacking with Dr. Anderson?
The fact that she told me when I went back 2 days later that someone who is my age, which is 68, that they usually recommend you at least get the number of fillers based on your age. So in my case, it would have been 6 or 7. She never told me that on the day that I was there. I never visited a clinic like this before. And so she told me things when I came back 2 days later that if she had told me on the day that I went for the consultation, that I would never have even gotten anything done. When I asked her if 2 fillers would make a difference in my appearance, she told me that it would, and it did not. And she told me I would see immediate results. I did not. And when I went back 2 days later and we looked at the pictures side by side, I asked her, it looks exactly the same to me. And I said, do you feel that there's any difference? And she kind of hesitated, and she looked at me and she said it was very subtle. Subtle was the word that she used. So subtle that I couldn't see a difference at all. So the bottom line for me is the things that she told me 2 days later when I went back to get a refund were things that she should have told me on the day that I went to the consultation. Because if two fillers of the Juvederm wasn't going to make a difference at all, why would I have spent any money? There was no way I could afford to spend money for 6 injections. And so that's the bottom line, that the things she told me 2 days later were things she should have told me on the day that I went for the consultation.
Okay. So, board members, can I start with you first, Dr. Rubin, and roll up from there?
Yeah, hey, it's Dr. Rubin. From what I read when I went over the casework, the testimony given by the complainant, is different than what I read, and so I'm going to ask the doctor. Doctor, did you tell her up front that you thought or you recommended 4 total, or did you recommend 6 total or 7 total, or what did you tell her on the first visit how many vials she was going to need?
On my first visit, I told her that she would need 3, possibly 4. And she said, well, I don't want to spend that much. And I said, we can probably see a difference with 2. Of course, I can't promise anything, and that's the hard part. I'd say most patients, we see a nice difference. And with her, I do see a difference. But it's not to her satisfaction, which is hard.
So you said, we really need 3 or 4. She said, I can only afford 2. Do you think you'll see a difference? You said, maybe, but I don't know. And then she knew that there, according to your testimony, not the complainant's testimony, you recommended more than 2. She understood that that was the recommendation. You believe that she understood that 2 may or may not make a difference, even a subtle difference. You had that discussion. She opted for two injections. You proceeded as such. And then on the follow-up visit to the clinic, if what I said was consistent with what happened in your clinic, and if not, please alter what I said. But if so, what then happened at the follow-up visit to your clinic?
So even in her email that she had sent, she said that in her email, she said she recommended doing two, possibly three fillers. I agreed to two. So in my notes, in the initial visit, I recommended three and she possibly four, and she agreed to two. So it's a really, it's hard sometimes because you're trying to work with a patient and trying to make them, see a difference. And so that's what I was trying to do in the first visit. And on the second visit, we just kind of went into more depth of what she can expect. And sometimes it does take more. It is a tricky thing in aesthetics to, you can't necessarily tell someone how much they're going to need definitively. We do try to do our best guess. And I'd say most patients with two syringes see a decent result. And I see a difference in her skin, but it's hard that she doesn't.
Do you think that you could guarantee a result like a dentist should?
I don't know any dentist that guarantees results. But I mean, I don't think I could ever guarantee results. And I think that's why we have that in our consent form. I would love to guarantee results, but unfortunately I cannot, as any doctor.
What does it mean that she, meaning the complainant, agreed to two? What was that agreement? How did that transpire? Why did you agree to two? Like, tell us, kind of form that for us so we understand who agreed, what the agreement was.
Right. And so when we were talking about what her goals were, you know, I recommended three, possibly four, because I recommended the cheek area, the chin area, and the sides here. And she said, well, I only want to spend this amount of money. I'll pay $1,700. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, the best bang for our buck with that amount of money would be to do up here, because it would kind of, oh, I'm sorry. Maybe you, not everyone can see me, but up in the cheek area, I think it'd be best to spend it here, and not treat the chin area or the sides of the mouth that bother her, because aesthetically, if you just do the bottom, it's just going to be heavy, in my opinion.
And then she understood that and said, with the money that I can spend, I'm willing to go through treatment with you, utilizing only two, and we're going to be doing it in these areas, even though I know you suggested more.
Yes.
Okay. For the respondent, Dr. Sadalek, I have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Rubin. Dr. Spratt.
I don't have any question at the moment. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Campbell.
Yes. Thank you. For our complainant, the patient, hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yes, I can. Yep.
Very good. So, you know, with the board's mission, our, you know, starting and ending, in the interest of the public safety and health, and after what you've heard today, exactly how can the board best help you resolve this today?
The board can best help me by asking the company to give me my money back. One of the things that Dr. Anderson said is that she can't guarantee results. And I just had an experience with a dentist, as a matter of fact, and I had to get a crown, and I had to get a temporary crown. And at the first day, part of the crown fell off. I went back, they fixed it. Then 2 days later, the other side of the temporary crown fell off. They fixed it. They stood behind their work. And so when she says that it's very tricky, that's sort of a tricky word to say that the results can be tricky. Well, I didn't see any results at all. And that's who paid the money. Maybe she saw results, but I didn't see any results. When I went to my dentist, I saw a result. They took care of it. And so I don't like the use of the word tricky, because that's a word that is very ambiguous. And I got to be honest with you, if a company can't guarantee results, then that's a company I don't want to ever do business with again. Ever.
Well, with regard to the doctor's testimony that on, I believe it was your first consultation, that after describing what it is that you were setting out to accomplish, that it would require 3 to 4, injections, but we settled on 2. And so,
when we settled on 2, we didn't settle on it until I said to her, will 2 make a difference in my appearance? And she said yes. So that's the only reason I settled on 2, because if all this other stuff that she told me 2 days later, if she had told me beforehand, I wouldn't have done anything at all. And I would have said, thank you very much for the consultation. I'm not getting any work done.
Well, as an example, if you took out a balloon out of a package, right, and you needed to inflate the balloon, and so, you know, if in the doctor's mind, when you, with regard to these injections, 3 or 4 injections would be consistent with putting 2 decent breaths into the balloon, right? And so when she says, well, how about doing 2? Or when you say, how about doing 2, because that's what I can afford, you know, that would be the equivalent of putting 1 breath into the balloon, and maybe 6 injections would be 3 good big breaths into the balloon. You know, it's very subjective is what I'm saying, is what it appears to me, you know, and it puts the board in a difficult position, because, when you paid for 2, you received 2, and then how physicians and professionals, you know, they utilize, you know, forms that we sign that, you know, that say that we understand, and that, you know, that there are, you know, are certain risks and not all the results are the same, and our bodies act differently and things of that nature. And so you have to understand that from the board's perspective, there are certain limitations with how we can proceed, depending on the circumstances. And when they're subjective, it makes it very difficult for the board, in the event that there wasn't any damage to the person, you know, or injuries sustained, that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yes, but you're using the word subjective, just like I used in my original letter. If I had gone to get my teeth cleaned from a dentist and I came out and my teeth weren't clean, it's not subjective. It's like either your teeth are clean or they're not.
Well, so, I get that, but we're, again, the balloon philosophy, we're not, you know, it's a little bit different. The examples that you're giving with regard to putting in a physical crown that covers a tooth that, you know, that we all are, you know, that we can see when we smile, or, you know, versus, you know, an injection of, that's going to go underneath the skin, you know, based on all of whether, you know, our faces are round or, you know, however our facial makeup is, that injection is going to be different. But when the doctor takes out the syringe, there's only a limited amount of medicine in there that the factory provides, right? And so depending on whether she's putting 1 injection in my face is going to look a lot different than 1 injection in your face. And so I think that that's where that word comes into play, if that makes sense.
Oh, I don't know how to respond to that, but except to say that if I had known all this in the consultation, I wouldn't have gotten it done. And then on the set, when I went back 2 days later, she told me the only way that could fix the issues with my face was to get plastic surgery. Okay, great. If she had told me that on day one, I wouldn't have done any of this. That's what I'm trying to get you to understand. I don't think enough information was given in the initial consultation for me to make an informed decision. I don't.
Okay. Thank you, SM. I need to roll through my other board members.
That was all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Let me go up to Dr. Popiel.
I don't necessarily have a ton of additional questions. I think Dr. Campbell's questioning was very good. The patient signed a consent agreement stating that there are no guarantees to the procedure. I think that based on both her testimony and Dr. Anderson's testimony, that essentially more was recommended, less was chosen. And it is a very subjective situation based on the skin laxity, based on the amount of fluid, et cetera. So the doctor's giving her best, you know, recommendations, and there was a decision to do less injected. So I don't feel like Dr. Anderson was out of line or misinforming the patient. So I don't have any other statements other than that.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. O'Peel. Ms. Gallen.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add at this time.
Okay. So we've heard from the complainant, we've heard from Dr. Anderson. Can we come up with a motion? So I'll throw some thoughts out, and then someone can construct it from here. It's unfortunate for both the complainant and for Dr. Anderson. I understand the complainant's point of view. I also understand Dr. Anderson's thought process in terms of trying to please the complainant and at least show some changes, or however minute they may be. So we have a motion either to move this for continuing medical education with letter of concern. We can most likely dismiss, because it looks to be as though for what was given and what was expected, maybe just somewhat of a conflict right there is what we're dealing with. So you need more.
Hey, this is Dr. Rubin. I've heard everything. I appreciate everybody's comment. I heard your suggestions. I've heard testimony. I appreciate Dr. Campbell's comparison. A comparison to a dentist performing a crown procedure has nothing to do with the type of treatment with in aesthetics here. It just isn't. It's just they're very, very different. And because of that, and because of everything that was put together, and because the physician who is licensed by this board, duly licensed by this board, has said that she sees a difference, I move to dismiss the case.
Okay, so we have a motion. Dr. Anderson, I agree with what Dr. Rubin has said. Maybe the best bet in the future is just to make sure that they understand it may not make that much of a difference, so that there's no misunderstandings from either party. So I'll second your motion, Dr. Rubin. And then we're going to need a roll call from Ms. Anthony.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Let's go ahead and move on to the next case.
Real quick, before we move on to number six, yep. Can I ask to recall the Ortiz matters for a quick clarifying question?
Yes.
So I just wanted to ask to clarify what the unprofessional conduct is. From my understanding, here's what I've got. Any conduct or practice that does or might constitute a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patient or public. Under 13-1501-31R, but I wanted to make sure I have that right from the board's perspective.
I think, yeah, I'm going back on it, but I think we were talking about ARS 32-1501, 31, which is unprofessional conduct. I think it was R, F, and P.
Okay. So R and then the F, the gross malpractice, and did you say P?
It looks like it was from my notes. I joined in on the vote at the end, but I think it was P as in Paul.
Okay. Got it. That was, I just wanted to make sure I had that right.
Okay. Ms. Anthony, was that what you had in your notes?
I'm looking, I need to look at the IRs real quick. So RFPSNT on 24.24.2, and then hold on just a second. On 24.23.7 is just R.
R, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right. I think it looks like we completed five. So we're making progress. Let's go ahead and do review consideration possible action regarding application for renewal of medical licensure. And obviously Dr. Spatz recused on 6A. So I'll make a motion for medical licensure for Dr. Spatz.
This is Dr. Popiel. I second that motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And then I'll make a motion for, we'll go to 6B as in boy, Dr. Deborah Smolinski. Dr. Rubin's recused. I'll make a motion for Dr. Smolinski's renewal of medical license.
This is Dr. Popiel. I second that motion.
6C, and this is Dr.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
6C as in cat. This is Dr. Mia Darling. I'll make a motion for her licensure, renewal of licensure.
I second that motion. This is Dr. Popiel.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. All right. So this is number seven, Dr. Rubin's recused, and it's review consideration, possible action regarding status of judicial review action filed by Dr. Colleen Huber. If board wants to go into executive, then someone can make that motion.
Do we need to just to get an update?
It's
or if there is no update, I guess.
We can ask Mr. Hutchinson. Is there an update?
Yes. So I think so. By my calendar, I think the last meeting, the last board meeting, was on November 9th. On the 15th, the following week, we had a pretrial scheduling conference before the court, where.
Mr. Casey, sorry to interrupt, but do we need to go to executive meeting for this?
I'm not giving any legal advice. If the board has any specific legal questions for me, we can, but I don't have any advice to give at this
okay,
point.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure we clear on that.
Yeah, just a procedural update on where we are in that case.
Okay.
So the following week on the 15th, we had a hearing, where essentially all we did was set, the trial date. So it's set for trial, de novo on January 31st and February 1st, Wednesday and Thursday. The court ruled that it would be a bench trial, so there won't be a jury. And we have on the 12th of January, we have a status conference regarding the party's motions in limine, which were just filings with evidentiary. It's basically a way to resolve evidentiary objections ahead of trial, so we can get pretrial rulings on some evidentiary issues. That's also the deadline for submitting our exhibits. So that will be, like I said, on the 12th, and then the trial itself will be at the end of January.
Any questions for Mr. Hutchinson on item number 7?
Nope.
Okay. So let's go ahead then, and we'll move on to item number 8, Executive Director Report. And we got 8A through F. So, Gail, it's all yours.
So did anybody have any questions on the report?
Nope.
Okay.
No one has any questions? Okay. Then we'll move on to number 9, future agenda items. I have an item, but let me go ahead and open it up to the board members first. Any board members?
Nothing for me.
Okay. So my thought process is on number 9, future agenda items. I think that the board probably needs to come up with more of a definitive expectation on surgical or office procedures. We kind of went through this. I think, Dr. Peel, you mentioned this, I think it was about a year ago. And somehow we kind of dissipated on that. But I really would like to revisit that to avoid issues or misunderstandings or people aren't clear, et cetera.
Were we waiting for feedback from the AZNMA on this?
I believe we were. And let me ask Ms. Anthony to update us.
Dr. Salek, members of the board, if I recall, we did a substantive policy statement, and then that substantive policy statement, the board decided to withdraw it. Basically, it just outlined what the statute says. And so, no, at this point in time, it's kind of stalled. So we can certainly take it up for discussion, include the possibility of defining office procedures or and or minor surgery. I can bring some information to the board maybe at the next meeting and open it up for discussion and sort of go from there.
I agree with you, Bruce. I think this needs to be defined in more in depth. What's in, what's out.
Yeah, I agree, Dr. Capillo. Ms. Anthony, you could look at the licensed states. I don't know. Maybe Dr. Rubin would know off the top of his head how many states are actually licensed. It's 20 some odd states, maybe. But look at the licensure of these other states and how they have that written to perhaps have a legislative review of that to help, you know, clarify.
Absolutely. I can bring that information before the board, and then the board can make the determination. If the board determines that legislation needs to change, then we need to go forth and you know, try and do that as well, and or define things under rule as well. So the board does have options on this.
Would it be possible with the other naturopathic institutions, just to, I think there's what, 5, maybe 6, to get their curriculum, their minor surgical curriculums?
Dr. Salek, members of the board, are you referring to the other accredited naturopathic colleges?
Correct.
Just right. And we can do that, the ones that actually teach it. Have minor surgery and curriculum, we can certainly do that.
Okay. Because maybe that would help, getting both of those would help provide some clarity.
Absolutely.
Do you guys think that maybe, I don't know, Gail, if your colleagues over at the Board of Advanced Practice Nursing and over at the Board
which are your nurse practitioners, and then over at the Board of Physicians and Assistants, if they might have a definition for each of their professionals that they go off of, and just as an info only kind of a thing that we can take a peek at as well, and see what they're doing is, you know, to help us, to help guide us if we need to be a little bit more detailed in certain things.
Yeah, absolutely. What I'll do is I'll pull the definitions from the other boards here in Arizona as well, so you can kind of compare how those are worded.
Thanks.
And that's a good point, Dr. Campbell. And then maybe Ms. Anthony, get the osteopathic and then the MD board.
Absolutely.
Hate to put all that on your plate, but I think that's going to give us enough information to start, you know, working from within that.
Okay.
Any other thoughts on the future agenda item?
Oh, yeah. What's the update on the CME for us?
That's still going through the process. If you looked at my my ED report, it's kind of going through the rules process. We're going through article by article, so that's coming up.
Oh, I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure. I was reading that like, oh, where was it? Where's that thing? Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And any other future agenda items that I've missed? Okay. And then we'll go ahead and we'll do call to the public. We'll do our countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Dr. Sadalek?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Dr. Sadalek, members of the board. This is Baron Glasgow, Executive Director of the Arizona Naturopathic Medical Association.
Hi, Baron.
Hi. I just need to take a minute on a brand new subject that, frankly, would probably be appropriate for an agenda item for your next meeting. I don't know what communication, if any, Gail's received on this at this point, but the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians has been working in the state of Idaho on legislation that was passed in early 2002, the previous legislative session, that established a licensed naturopathic doctor. And it's a convoluted mess up there, and it allows any number of medical professionals, including dentists, chiropractors, and others, to effectively obtain a certificate of naturopathic medicine or naturopathic doctor that would allow them to become licensed NDs. And it creates a whole mess. The ANP is going to be reaching out, if they've not done so already, to different or all the regulatory boards across the country, asking them to oppose this legislation. Gail, have you received anything on this yet?
I did receive a brief email on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I would recommend, if I may do so, that you put this on the agenda for next meeting. It's important only because if the board or, a group up there either has docs licensed that may want to become then licensed in Arizona, they may not be qualified, to be NDs according to our rules. Also, if there's continuing education that comes out of that group, it may not be at the same standard. So I think there could be some potential impacts on Arizona that need to be considered. So with that, I'll shut up and let you guys continue.
And this is Gail. Baron, could you email me some of that information that you have on
I
that?
Will. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And then Baron, could you also on that let us know how you would like, or let Ms. Anthony know how you want that on the agenda, as perhaps the American Physicians, Idaho, et cetera, so that we can get the wording right?
I'll certainly do that. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You bet.
I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, because we're on adjournment, unless any board members have anything else to add. No? Going once, twice, three. So Thank you, Casey. Appreciate
thank it. You. Thank yeah. you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Take care. See ya.